Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors from Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana LB, and tonight we have some very, very important information for you. Our special guest for this evening will be Brother Kamenta U. Bay, and he's going to be dealing with Federal and Civil Procedures Part 3. Now, at the outset, if you have questions and comments, if you have a case right now, if you have a loved one with a case, bring that case to the line with you. Go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll go ahead and get you in there doing this broadcast so that the brother can aid you in remedying your situation. We're going to be dealing with a lot of the topics that we dealt with last week, but from a whole different perspective. Keep in mind that we're offering our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the Commerce Game and How to Play, as well as the history of the United States and its bankruptcy and all the information, background information on that. The way to access that is simply by contacting me, Tahaka Amana LB, at email, tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll rush that to you. Also, for those of you who have my library, we will be adding a ton of information into the library in the morning. Some of the information is the actual templates that you can use to create your own subpoenas. And I serve them, and that information be put in Tahaka's library first thing in the morning. For those of you who do not have the most comprehensive library inside the United States, please contact me, Tahaka Amana LB, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you in there, and we'll guide you and direct you to the places you need to go and show you exactly how to put things together and to remedy whatever situations you got. If you're trying to discharge your debts, if you're trying to become a secured party creditor, if you're trying to get your loved ones out of prison, if you want to start exercising your authority as and understanding civil and federal and civil procedure, we'll show you how to do that. And there's tons of information for your children to offset some of the tales that they're teaching them inside the public school system. All that information is available to you right there in Tahaka's library, and the way to access that is contacting me directly at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m., and we'll get you in there. Okay, without further ado, we're going to try to get as much information as we can, so I'm going to open up the line and let my brother in.
Islam Noble.
Islam Noble, what's going on, my brother?
Maintaining family, busy as a bee, running back and forth in and out these courts, you know what I'm saying? Following the procedures, it's very important to follow the procedures.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. Tonight, brother, I want you to give us some background so we can connect where we left off at last week and just give us some rough draft or just briefly take us through the civil procedure process, the federal and state procedures, and then that way we'll, you know, for the new listeners that's coming in that may have missed you last week or haven't got the chance to listen to the broadcast you done last Sunday. So let's bring them up to speed briefly. That way they won't be completely lost, and then they'll know exactly what we're talking about. Could you run that for us?
Yes, Noble, and that's excellent that you bring that forth, because basically when I have class on Tuesday, that's what I do. I always constantly keep repetitiously going over information, because the information is just so much that you got to repetitiously keep going over it. For some, it may be redundant, but it doesn't have to be redundant if you ask questions, so that way, you know, we can get you at another level or another speed that you want to be at. So the information can really never be redundant, because, again, a lot of us is just not, you know, learned in this area. You know, these lawyers, esquires and attorneys and judges, they went to school for this stuff, all right? And unfortunately, we didn't get this in school. All right, like we should have, all right? I stated this before in class, the New York State statute, what I came across in my research, that we were supposed to receive this in school, all right? And and if you go to the sixth edition of the Black Spell Dictionary and look at the word civilian is one who's skilled or learned in law, all right? And you come to find that we don't have that skill like we should. All right, we were supposed to do this on every grade level. But going into the civil procedure, all right, and it doesn't matter if this procedure is on a federal level or it's on a state level, the point is you have to follow the procedure, all right? You have to know the local rules of the court, like the state have local rules and the federal have local rules. Now, one thing I can say about the federal, which is slightly different from the state, the federal, there are what you call as judges' rules. Because if anyone is going into a federal venue to do any forms of litigation, you must get the judges' rules, all right? Because in those judges' rules, besides the local rules of the court, the judge has a certain way he wants you to follow a certain procedure. Because if you don't follow the procedure according to the judge's rule, the judge is going to hold that against you, which can be a prejudice. And a lot of us is probably not even aware about the judge's rule. So every judge has a rule when it comes to federal court. So if you have filed a federal lawsuit already, or you're in federal litigation already, all right, something that you need to be aware of is the judge's rule. Because in the judge's rule, it gives you a summary outline, all right, of what the judge is looking for based upon certain federal litigation, which is very, very important, all right? Because normally when you go by the judge's rule, he would acknowledge you better going by his rules, because this is how he wants to, what you call, preset the litigation process. And by you following those rules is so important. Again, when you are filing a federal complaint, verified federal complaint, one rule that you must follow, all right, is a notice of claim. Every municipality who you are bringing suit against, state all the way down to the local government, if you're suing them in a federal venue, you must bring what you call is a notice of claim. It's very important. Why? Because Rule 12B-6 in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure is one of the mechanisms attorneys would use to dismiss your case. And what it states is that the plaintiff failed to state a claim where relief can be granted. That's exactly what that rule states. And because of that, they would seek to dismiss your case. That's one of the most dilatory and demurs that they use to dismiss your case. Now, the question is, what can you do? If your case right now in federal court is facing sets its motion, all right, where the adversary is seeking to dismiss your case, and of course the judge is looking to grant that dismissal once that motion to dismiss is being put in by that attorney. What should you do? You have to do two things. One is you have to put in the motion in opposition, all right, or, you know, a motion in opposition, a notice of motion in opposition, and or you put in what you call is an affidavit in opposition to that motion to dismiss. That's a must, all right? You have to put that in, all right? Not only that you would put that in as an opposition to his motion to dismiss, then you have to put in what you call is discovery. Discovery is another motion pleading that you have to put in, because you can put in a discovery any time before you into a trial. So all pre-trial motions, you should technically follow that up with some type of discovery. All right, because discovery is a disclosure, and you want certain information that you wanted to be able to be disclosed to you so you can use that as a defense. So putting in what you call is an affidavit in opposition or a notice of motion against that motion to dismiss, which is a 12B6 that attorneys would use, you must put in an opposition motion or affidavit in support of that motion, and plus you want to put in your discovery. Very important, because why? I'm doing a case like that right now, all right, where a particular case that I'm dealing with, the attorney, of course, what he did is a removal, so you'll know what's going on. A removal under a 1446, all right, 1446, 1441, all the way up to 1446. These are statutes that I just named. It's under Title 28 of the United States Code. All right. When they want to do a removal, there's times where you may have a federal litigation and the adversary party in state court will remove it into federal court. And the only reason why they would move it to federal court is because that's just another way of trying to overthrow or defeat your action or your complaint in a federal venue. All right. So now what do you do to defeat that? Because that's something that you need to know in the federal litigation process. Well, there's what you call the Younger, which is Younger, abstention, right, which is AB, abstention, which is AB, STENTION, doctrine, all right? The Younger abstention doctrine is a doctrine that says that a case cannot be removed into federal court if there's a state action, all right? If there's an action that has been commenced in the state, like, for instance, you brought a state action, which is your civil litigation that you decide you want to do in state court, you have to find times where attorneys would take that action and try to transfer it up into the federal court to dismiss that, all right? That's a chess move that they're making on you. So this is something that you got to be aware of. So how do you combat that? Again, you would have to put in what you call the motion to remand the case back to state court, because you have a better leg to stand on in the state court depending on what your complaint is. Like, for instance, if it's a contract, all right, you don't argue contract issues in reference to a state in federal court. You have to argue that in state courts. I have a case like that right now where the attorney removed the case from state court to federal court. And so now a motion to remand the case back to state court is the appropriate motion. What is the time span for that? 30 days, which means that the time that you have been served with the notice of removal of the case from out of state court into the federal court, you would have to file a motion to remand the case back. You have 30 days from the date that you served with that notice of motion of removal. You have 30 days to file what you call is a motion to remand. When you file your motions, and it's very important to be aware of this, if you file your motion, like for instance, I just mentioned about a motion in reference to a 12B6, which means if an attorney, as an adversary, opponent, files a 12B6 motion to dismiss your case in federal court, you have to file an affidavit in opposition, right? An affidavit in opposition, right? And you file, of course, your discovery, which is your disclosure, and something else you need to be aware of because you want to be able to defeat the attorney, all right, in the process. So that way you can overcome what the judge is trying to decide with the attorney is with what? A memorandum of law. A memorandum of law is very important also because most people is not aware of a memorandum of law. What is a memorandum of law? A memorandum of law, so those who are listening can get an idea of what I'm referring to. The memorandum is nothing but res judicata, which means case laws that have been already decided, which is stare decisis, right, which is the precedent cases that judges have made prior. And when you use those cases in reference to your case, right, those cases have to be relevant to your case. You would have to use a memorandum of law. So, therefore, what I'm saying is 12B6 motion is being made against you. So throw your complaint out, right? What does you have to do? First step, affidavit in opposition. You have to put in what you call is a discovery. And, of course, you put in the memorandum in support. All right? That's
okay,
the three.
Let me stop you right there. Now,
yes.
We're going to say, we're going to bring this down all the way down so layman can understand that. We'll say that we're in there on charge of grand theft. Okay. So they want to try to, and I'm trying to make sure that I understand this right, they're going to try to remove that, and but you're going to put in all the relevant case law involving that particular case because you're saying that they're going to put in irrelevant information. Is that right? Straighten me out on that.
All right. You may mention something, and I don't want people to be confused. They need to have clarity. If you're being charged in a criminal court, they're not going to remove that. They're going to try that within that jurisdiction. So that's something that you need to be aware. But what you can do, all right, in your defense, Brother Tahaka, is you can do what you call as a notice of removal, and you can remove it into federal court, which is I've done for another Moore's case here in Long Island. All right? And you say, what do you mean by that? Like you said, breaking down in layman's terms. Let me give you an example, all right, because I have to give it to you on both sides, all right, because say, for instance, now you're being charged, all right, in a state court or a county court. Can you remove that case into federal court? Yes, you can. You can do what you call is a notice of removal, all right, you have to follow the procedure in the notice of removal, all right, which means you have to file a motion, all right, in the state court. But the motion is only filed when you first do your notice of removal in the federal court, all right? But what you have to do is you have to take all the documents that you have in state court and attach those documents to your case in federal court. You have to attach it, all right? But you have to file it in the form of what you call is a complaint and a notice of removal, all right? It's a notice of removal and a complaint, federal complaint, which is a civil cover sheet, with all the supporting documents in that case on a local level, which is the state level, all right? You can remove that criminal case into the federal court. Once you remove that case, everything stops in that court. I just want to let people know that right now as they're listening, that if you got a criminal case pending right now with you, you can remove that case to federal court. Once you remove it, that shuts everything down in that criminal case. Nothing can go forward in that criminal case until the federal judge makes a ruling on that case. All right, now what they're going to try to do is put in a motion to remand it back to the state court to be prosecuted. But one of the things they're going to argue is the abstention doctrine, the Younger abstention doctrine. What is the Younger abstention doctrine? This is a doctrine that you must know. You can go to the Black's Law Dictionary, look up Younger abstention doctrine. It's going to specifically say in there that the federal courts will not interfere with state actions, be it civil or criminal. You must know this. The Younger abstention doctrine specifically states, when you go to the 6th edition of the Black's Law Dictionary, look that up, and it's going to show you in there that it's going to specifically say that the federal courts will not interfere with a state action, be it civil or criminal. But listen to this carefully. Since we're talking about something criminal, because Brother Tahaka brought it out about supposed to be in charge, you will be the one who want to remove that case, all right, because you want to stop the prosecution against you in that local criminal court when you bring it to federal court. Now, what they're going to try to do is file a motion to remand it back to the local criminal court to continue their prosecution, but the prosecution is going to stop. You're going to stop all prosecutions because why? The case has been removed out of that venue into the federal venue, all right? Now, listen to this carefully. What you have to show to defeat and overcome the Younger abstention doctrine, because this is the defense that the DA is going to use against you to have the case remanded back to state local court, in order to be remanded. So you need to know this. You have to defeat that doctrine by showing explicitly in your removal that is malicious prosecution, which means you're being prosecuted maliciously. But now listen to this carefully. It's not you just saying, well, I as the defendant is being maliciously prosecuted in this local criminal court for such a thing. No, you can't state it like that as your argument. You have to begin to show what is malicious prosecution. Want me to give you an example? Give you an example. I give you an example. I have a case right now. There's a particular Moore where he got a traffic infraction. He's being tried in criminal court, local criminal court. He's being hit with a misdemeanor. Now, because of the fact that they're hitting him with no insurance, driving with a suspended license, and all that other crazy stuff that everybody's familiar with. Now, he's being prosecuted. What I did was remove the case to federal court by a notice of removal. Now, what do I have to do to prove the case? I have to show that it's malicious prosecution. How do I show that it's malicious prosecution? Do I state that it's malicious, or do I have to show the evidence that it's malicious prosecution? Got to show the evidence, because you got to know rules of evidence. Here's the evidence. The disposition of the police officer was being used by the state prosecutor to draft up the misdemeanor complaint. You follow me? In the deposition, the officer stated that the Moore, right, was supposed to be in court at 9 p.m. There's no such court at 9 p.m. at this court. All courts start at 9 a.m. So that information is a vehicle traffic law violation to misdescribe, according to subsection 238 of the vehicle traffic law of the state of New York. So if you're in New York, y'all, and you got a ticket in New York and it's been misdescribed or illegible, it's an automatic dismissal based upon an application. An application, what they mean, is by you putting in a motion to dismiss. That's what they call an application. But you would have to cite the statute and attach as an exhibit, right, to the motion to show right here. Mm-hmm. Either the ticket was either illegible, which means you can't read it, or it was misdescribed, which means they put the wrong information. Subsection 238 of the Vehicle Traffic Law is the statute that automatically dismisses those tickets that's in error. But because of the fact that the district attorney is aware of that and they continue to want to prosecute them more, that's what you call malicious prosecution, and that's the evidence that I'm talking about that you would have to describe in your notice of removal, and that will be an extraordinary case that the federal court will hear and will give you what you call is declaratory relief, Brother Tahaka.
Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I hope y'all got that. Now, I want to say at this particular point, if it's any of you out there listening to this broadcast, if you have a case or if you have a relative or a family member with a court case now that you need some assistance on, go ahead and raise your hand on this broadcast, and the brother can address your situation or either set it up where you could contact him later, and he can go over the case with you. I want to also add that I don't want you all to forget that on November the 18th, we're going to have Dr. Scott Whitaker right here in Jacksonville, Florida, and he's going to be to Masjid Absalom's bookstore right down here on Pearl Street. And if you're in Jacksonville at the time, you need to be here and catch the Brother of Holistic Medicine. He's going to be here. Also on the January the 11th through the 13th at the Best Western right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we're going to have the Morris Summit. And that is where we're going to set up workshops. We're going to be actually teaching you how to set up an economic base. And I will be there also discussing law, contract law, and things of that nature. Matter of fact, I'm going to ask a brother some things here in a moment. But don't miss that. And for information involving both events, you can contact me at area code 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, I want to remind all the newcomers that's just coming in, because I can see you guys coming in, and the switchboard is lighting up, and you're steady coming in. For those of you who haven't gotten the free articles, we're offering them. You can just send me an email at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll rush that to you. For those of you who are attempting to get more education for yourself and your family and learn how to deal in these courts, the documents and stuff is there, and audio and video is there, made available to you. Also, information on Brother Kamintu Ubay, my guest tonight, is there, so you'll get a chance to take your time and absorb this information. And you just simply contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, Brother, let's take another case. Now, let's say that I got a ticket where they say I was speeding, reckless driving, I ran over a stop sign, improper tag, headlight out, busted windshield, resisting arrest, and but let's say that I was what's called a secured party creditor. And what I did was, before I went to court, I went down there and took my last will and testament and all my documents attached to that, and assigned it to the judge to that particular docket number. And my estate is in place. And so I'm exercising the authority of executor of an existing estate. And but I needed your assistance. What kind of position would I be in, and what do you think would happen in a situation like that?
Well, you know, Noble, you just gave a process that you described on the ear for those to listen, because now what happens is this. Which way you want to go, all right? Because you kind of remind me of RVBayPublication.com with Roz Mariah, who's with Taj Tariq Bay. And there's times where when you go to the website, they pull off writs and affidavits that's prefabbed, and they would take that information and they would insert whatever information they have into that prefab writ or affidavit online, and then they send it out to whatever agency they may have a problem with. You know what I'm saying? It could be child support, it could be a mortgage, it could be a traffic ticket. All right, Brother Tahaka, I have to put it out there to be fair. All right, and the reason why I'm saying that is because when you ask me that question, that kind of brings me back to that. Then people would call me and said the very same thing that you stated about the estate and the secured party with the UCC, and so where do I take it from there? Well, put it this way. That's a process that people have to learn. All right? So the question is, what procedure that you apply in order to get your case abated? Abated, for those who are listening, and you can go to Black's Law Dictionary and look up the word abatement, is to dismiss the case. When you abate something, you're looking to dismiss the case. So that's the question, Brother Tahaka, is what procedure that you followed to abate the case, all right, when you came to implicate or when you're seeking to implicate that procedure. Now, if you're asking me how would you deal with a traffic ticket, all right, I would give you a different procedure, all right? Now, I can use any procedure. I can use a procedure that you just described to those who are listening in reference to the estate and the UCC, you as being a secured party. I can use that procedure too. Or the procedure that I normally use, because it's interesting that you brought that up, because somebody who's listening on the ear had emailed me their traffic ticket. And this is what I tell people, that a lot of these traffic tickets that's been drafted up is erroneously has been issued to you. All right? When you look at a traffic ticket, the one that I noticed that I've seen that was sent to me, I didn't see no tax ID number on it. But the officer, David Lance, claimed that this Moore, right, was speeding, all right, and he put down 50 miles an hour in a 40 miles an hour zone. This is what the officer had stated. But when you begin to start to analyze the ticket itself said, and you look at it carefully at the bottom of the ticket, it says detection method. What do they mean by detection method? Which means, what did they use to determine that he was speeding? Was it a radar? You know what I'm saying? You know, because there's different types of technology and methods that is being used by the police force to determine one was speeding. In that box, brother, you have, like, quite a few boxes you can either check off to determine what was being used as a detection method. That box was not checked off, brother. If that box was not checked off, that ticket is automatically to be dismissed, because he has to show a detection method to the court as evidence to say that he was speeding. Just to say that he was speeding without any of those technologies and methods that they use to prove that he was speeding, all right, the case would have to be thrown out because he has no evidence, all right? Mm-hmm. And so, excuse me?
Go ahead, brother, I'm listening.
Yes, this is what was used. This is what was used, brother, you know what I'm saying, against this Moore. So basically what's happening, I'm helping this Moore get rid of that ticket. But it's not about just getting rid of the ticket also, all right, it's about a lawsuit. Because if you pay close attention to the ticket, Noble, right, and for those who are listening on the show, first of all, write this down, all right, and you're going to hear this live exclusively. It's called Title 19 of the United States Code, subsection 1001. It's called fraudulent conveyance of language, all right? That's what you need to look at, fraudulent conveyance of language, which is a federal offense, and it also says on that ticket about perjury, that any time that if an officer writes up a ticket, he's under the penalty of perjury with his signature to show that you know, if he's making a purge statement, that it's a misdemeanor, and nobody's looking at that. But once the ticket is thrown out and he's won, he's supposed to get a certified copy to show that that ticket was thrown out. But then what do we do? Bring a lawsuit. Don't say, oh, we got the traffic ticket thrown out, so now I can jump in my car and I can just drive off now because everything is everything. No, that's not true. So what's going to happen? You're going to get another ticket, and you're going to get another ticket, you're going to get another ticket. These people are actually targeting you to give you a ticket to meet their quota. So how do you stop the madness? Is to sue them. If you keep bringing lawsuits after lawsuits after lawsuits for every ticket you get, I guarantee you, family, they're going to stop. Because why? The lawsuit money going to be greater than the ticket money they're going to keep bringing in. So who you think going to last longer? Them keep hitting you with tickets, or you keep hitting them with lawsuits? Because remember now, the money that you can claim from these people is a minimum of $10,000. All right? And $10,000 per day. You said, what do you mean by per day? Which means that once the officer issues you a ticket, he puts it into the system. So your name's in the system. All right? So now remember, you private. He don't put you into a public offering. That's what he did. That's why I said, please, go get the dictionary of financial terms or banking terms and look up those terms issue. Look up the terms offer. Look up the terms acceptance. All right, and when you see these financial terms, you see that these people are doing banking business, all right, on behalf of the municipality, which is the city. So now we have to sue them for every single day that your name is in the system, all right, for a ticket that was fraudulently created by the officer. You got to sue them every single day. And what do you use as a measurement? Title 42, subsection 1983. Look at the statute. Look at the statutory amount for the damages that that officer has created against you, and you take that amount and you multiply the days that your name has been in the system, because you want your name to be purged out of the system, all right? That's important, Brother Tahaka.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, Brother, you gave an excellent explanation of how to go about handling that situation, and I'm pretty sure there are many other ways too that you know about how to do this, because see, this is my opinion. I look at it like this: we know that the United States is a corporation that operates on a continuous series of contracts. If I go to the store and let's say I want to buy a can of string beans, okay, I'm going to take a contract of fiat currency. They might say, well, string beans are 65 cents a can. I don't want but one can. I go in there and I give them a dollar bill. They're going to ring it up. They're going to give me the change back. And then what, for the paper that I gave her, she's going to give me a white piece of paper called a receipt. Because what we just did was an exchange of contracts. Okay, now, but the only problem about that is when I be walking out the store with the white piece of paper in my hand instead of the green when I came in, that don't seem right. I need to be coming out there with something different. But needless to say, the entire country operates under a continuous series of contract law. And so it behooves us, if we're living every day and we're working on jobs and we're hustling and driving and doing everything that we can to eke out a living in a contractual system, it behooves us to understand contract law and understand how to deal with civil and federal procedures, administrative procedures, because all of it by us knowing that and understanding that, we would fare better and we'll be no longer mentally locked out and considering ourselves a victim of circumstances, when we can be a controller of circumstances based on the knowledge that we have acquired. Because if the whole country operates this way, it only common sense tells me that this is something that I need to understand. And I just wanted to put that information out there. For those of you who are new coming in, we're listening to Brother Commit to You, Bay, and we're dealing with federal and civil procedure inside the United States and handling yourself in the courts and things of that nature. Now, Brother, I want to ask you, let's deal with the let's deal with the child custody situation. Let's say that the cops came to the house and they want to take the child away, and they feel like they have every right to do that. Child services called, somebody said you did this and that and the other. So explain that situation and how we go about dealing with that.
All right, brother, brother, what I'm about to say is going to throw people to the floor, because I talked about this earlier today with Amor, and Amor is flabbergasted. Please, those, get your papers and your pencils or your pens, your recorders on, because you got to hear this. You got to hear this. Listen to me carefully, family, because this is no joke, and this is the reason Prophet Noble Jawali had educated the Moors to know this knowledge, and it's up, and it's our responsibility, Moorish Americans' responsibility, to go out and teach our brothers and sisters about their nationality and their birthright. Let me tell you, family, because Brother Tahaka hit up on a very serious topic. The 14th Amendment is what the Europeans are using today to rob you of your birthright. Because when you look at that 14th Amendment, right, it says all persons born, all right? We're not going to look at naturalized. We're just going to look at the word born. It's subject to the United States jurisdiction thereof, all right? This is what they say. Now, the prophet made it clear. He said if the Declaration of Independence is to say that if we all are considered to be equal, all man is equal, right, there's no need for the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. So listen to me carefully. When our sisters, our mothers, I should say, went into the hospital, which is the ward, they did not realize that they was constructively given possession of the baby to the state on paper. Where do I commit to you get that information from? Go to the 6th edition of the Black Folk Dictionary. Look up the word delivery, D-E-L-I-V-E-R-Y, delivery, and you're going to see the word res, right, which is another Latin term in the Black Folk Dictionary, means thing. That's the reason why you are not a resident, because a resident means to identify you as a thing. Because ident is identity, and res means thing in Latin. All right? So listen to me carefully. The birth certificate, at the top of everybody's birth certificate, it names the state where the birth certificate was issued. Listen to me carefully. We got to talk about finance, and if you really want to comprehend what I'm talking about, the word birth. Go look up the word birth in a Webster's dictionary or any dictionary, a good etymology dictionary. Look up the word birth. When I say birth, I'm not talking about the B-I-R-T-H. Look at the B-E-R-T-H. Then go to what you call is Investopedia. Investopedia is I-N-V-E-S-T-O-P-E-D-I-A, Investopedia.com. Go to that website and type in certificate. Read the definition for certificate. The reason why I'm giving you the Investopedia, because those may not have the dictionary of financial and investment terms or the dictionary of banking terms, all right, or the Bouvier, which is another congressional banking dictionary that Congress has used when they put out their bills of equity, which is these statutory laws that we're dealing with. So when you look at the word certificate and look at the word birth, then you begin to start realizing that they're using that as commercial paper. Just like Jacob and Esau in the book of Genesis, how Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, or Jacob wanted Esau to sell his birthright. This is what happened to us. Our birthright today, family, is being sold in the form of birth certificate. Certificate, family, is a financial structure. Is a structured financial document that's being issued. And you have to do a UCC-1 on that. But who's the debtor? Let me tell you who's the debtor. There's two debtors involved when you get your UCC-1 statement. The Attorney General, listen to me carefully, the 6th edition of the Black's Law Dictionary, look up this word or the phrase, parent, P-A-R-E-N-S, parents, Patria, P-A-T-R-I, right? P-A-T-R-I-A-E. Or sometimes there's an A at the end without an E, because sometimes what they do, they spell it as with a ligature, which is a connection between the A and the E. You'll see that spelling too. Parents Patria. Go to the sixth edition of the Black Flow Dictionary, look up the definition of parents Patria. When you see parents Patria, look at it very carefully. Scrutinize it when you read it. There's going to be a section in there that you're going to read where it's going to say that the attorney general has what? Parent Patria. Right? He would have to be the debtor. Who's the second debtor is the state. The state is the second debtor. All right? Or you could put the state the first debtor, or you could put the attorney general the first, whatever position you want to put them in. But you have to name the state, and you have to name the attorney general as the debtor, and you have to name yourself as a secured party. Now, the birth certificate. Because now the birth certificate is what you got to look at, because that is nothing but structured finance. That's an instrument that the state is receiving fundings on your child. And the reason why I'm putting that information out, so that way you can go get your children, and for those who are being subject to child support, that's a fraud. Because they're getting money for that child through that birth certificate, so why would they have to attack you and throw you in jail because they're saying you're not getting child support? No, the state is getting child support off your child through that birth certificate. That's why this child support thing against the brothers and the sisters who may be subject to it, that's all an attack on us, family. And we have to comprehend this language and this knowledge, and stop the brothers stop got to go after the sisters for child support, and the sisters stop got to go after the brothers for child support, because where the child support money is that birth certificate that the state is getting. If you take your brother or your sister to court for child support, that is called surplus monies. That's what that is called, surplus monies. So we must recognize that we have to stop attacking each other. But the problem is we get mad with each other, we get emotional with each other, and so therefore we're not thinking what they call as sanely like we should, all right? Because when we get angry, we get insane, and then all of a sudden we want to take the other party to court and sue because we just want to hurt the other party. But technically, who's getting hurt? Mother, father, and child is getting hurt by the state. Why? Because all three of those family members have a birth certificate, and the state is getting money on the mother, who was once a baby, father, who was once a baby, and, of course, the baby between the mother and father. All right? But in the meantime, this is what we have to do. Freedom of Information Act request. Request your birth certificate, which means whatever information on the birth certificate and that bond number that you see, you have to put that in the Freedom of Information Act request and send that Freedom of Information Act request to the Department of who? Commerce. Commerce. Why? If you can remember, family, to all those who are listening, they did censors a couple of years back, either last year or the year before last, they did a censor. A majority of us, if not all of us, received an envelope in the mail at your domicile, and they wanted you to fill out the censor and put it back in the envelope and mail it out back to the Census Bureau. But if you look at the top left-hand corner of the envelope, what did you see? The Department of Commerce, the Bureau of Census. That's where your birth certificate is at. That's why the Freedom of Information request, Act request is important, because when you get back your birth certificate, don't be surprised that on the front face of your birth certificate, which is a financial document, you will see stamps from the bank, several stamps from banks. What is that telling you? That they're trading your birth certificate on the market as discount securities. We must get those instruments to prove our case, all right? This is the instrument that they're getting. Why I'm saying that, once you put a lien against the Attorney General and against the state who were issued the birth certificate, those documents that you would get would be the papers that you would file with your UCC. Very important to know that, right? Once you file those documents, then you have to bring an action for what? Declaratory judgment, relief, declaring your rights as a parent and under the doctrine of jus sanguinis. Jus sanguinis means right to blood. Jus meaning right, sanguinis means blood. Because family, let me tell you something. There's no such thing as you having custody or having no custody. Custody is not a term that one should be using because we are all mothers and fathers, and what these Europeans are doing is they're cheating us as chattel paper, chattel property, and commerce, items of commerce. This is how they're treating us. But that's why I say look up the word birth, B-E-R-T-H. Look up the word certificate in the Dictionary of Finance or go to Investopedia. Look at the language, and then you begin to start understanding what's going on because that UCC financial statement is needed because the information on the birth certificate has to be used as what? The collateral. It has to be used as the collateral to place a lien on those individuals in reference to those who was the issuer of that certificate. Then what we need to do, too, is get the QSUP number on the birth certificate to show how much funding that it has generated. Because now we have to go after the monies that's being made. All right, family? That's what we have to do. But as far as the child is concerned, as far as getting your child back through the doctrine of jus sanguinis, you got to bring that case into federal court. Why? Listen, the birth certificate is issued. It's a state-issued financial document. But why you got to bring them into federal court? Because the 14th Amendment shows that, because it says all persons born or naturalized is subject to the jurisdiction of the United States thereof. So that automatically becomes a federal case because it's the 14th Amendment is where these states are issuing the birth certificate to get the funding from the federal government from each and every single last one of us who have a birth certificate within the United States. That's very important, Brother Tahaka.
All right, fantastic. That's expert, excellent delivery on that thing. I'm going to take it a little step further, but before I do, my brother, we have some callers coming in. I'm going to open up the line, and let's hear what they got to say, okay?
Yes.
Area code 256, tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment. 256. Area code 256. Okay, we get no response. Let me go on to the next one. 954, can you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment? Area code 954.
This is Janet Wigley from Miami, Florida. How you doing, brothers?
Hey, Janet. What? Let us have it, Janet.
Okay, my question is, on this birth certificate that we need to send in, like to the Attorney General and the state, can that be done at, like, one person at a time, or do this have to be like when you do a lawsuit, like with a group of people, do it have to be like a group of people doing that, or can it be done one person at a time?
Like a class action lawsuit.
Well, I hear what you're saying. It could be a class action if everybody's on the same page, but you can definitely do it at one at a time. All right?
Okay.
But it would be powerful if it's a class action.
Okay.
All right? It would be very, very powerful because then what happens is, matter of fact, if anybody heard of the Townsend Act or the Maternity Act of 1921, very important for all the brothers and the sisters who's listening right now to this show, go to the Maternity Act of 1921 or the Townsend Act of 1921, same difference. And when you look up the Townsend Act or the Maternity Act of 1921 and you pull that up or you Google that, you're going to see that the birth certificate was an unconstitutional document.
Okay.
Unconstitutional. So how is it that they keep perpetuating an unconstitutional document? All right? Because they're making money and where they're using the point of origin to create these birth certificates is the 14th Amendment, where it says all persons born. So how do they have a record or know a record of you being born other than what? A birth certificate. But the word certificate is referring to a financial instrument, like a bond, a note, a voucher, a coupon. Look up these financial terms that I'm putting out there so you know exactly what's going on, family. So you can do it as an individual or you can do it as a class action, whatever one you proceed to do it on. But we have to do this so we can show our brothers and sisters across the country that they have taken our birthright and sold it in the form of a birth certificate on chattel paper.
Okay.
Okay, was that helpful, sister?
Yes, it is. Well, one other thing. As far as the class action, is there a minimum amount to file?
No, there's no minimum amount for class. I mean, well, you know it got to be more than one people.
Right.
So true. And technically, there is a minimum. It got to be more than one month. And normally, they would look for about three or four people to be class action. But let me tell you something now. There's a way you have to implicate that, all right? Because if you use the term class action, now they're going to want you to hire an attorney.
Oh, okay.
You get me? So you can still do a class action without hiring an attorney, but you can't label it a class action. You can have a numerous amount of plaintiffs. Like, say, for instance, say you have several people in your family that say, you know what, Mrs. Wigley, you know, our family member is onto something. She found out that the government is making money off of us through the birth certificate, and say you got several family members who wants to join in the lawsuit, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They can name as plaintiffs on the suit, but don't say it as a class action. Because once the judge see that it's a class action, or not even the judge, it can be the clerk. The clerk, when you want to file your complaint, once they see that there's a class action, the first thing they're going to say is, well, who's the attorney on the case? Because all class actions must be represented by an attorney. But you can have multiple plaintiffs without putting class action.
Okay. I got you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sister. We're going to go ahead and mute you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is some very, very important information that the brother is delivering here. But let's bring this on down to the pavement and the curb and the sidewalk and the grass between the sidewalk. Now, we're going to say that you have a birth certificate. You looked at your birth certificate. You see your mother's name is listed there as an informant. She's informing the bank that she brought a new product on into the world that's being traded on the New York Stock Exchange at Discount Security. And what is taking place is the people that have used that certificate of birth has the state is profiting from that to fund their municipality, and they've gotten money on that certificate for that state. So and the exchange for that is the fact that during your lifetime you're going to pay that money back that was given to the state in regard to that bond through your actions, your taxes, and all of these type of things. You're paying taxes and all this stuff. So now what is very, very interesting is we're going to say that you live in New York City, but you want to move to Texas. And the Driver License Bureau says that you got to notify us within 14 days once you're inside of Texas if you move from one state to another, because now officially Texas is going to be involved in receiving some of the interest on that bond. Is going to share that with New York City, you see. And there's somebody in place of the bond. They're acting as the executive of that particular state, but what you're going to have to do is turn this thing around and understand the information that we're putting down here for you so that you can occupy the office of executive of that estate and take control of that bond and go ahead and stop this thing, or you can turn it around and put it together as a lawsuit. You got a smoking gun in your hand, especially people of African descent that's labeled as Negro, colored, and black. There's no such nationality, no such race people, so that's part of the smoking gun, and they owe you between $30 and $33 million per year for each year of your life until your current age for the conspiracy and the fraud. And so, therefore, you have everything that'll take. But just as the brother is saying, that you're going to have to go through certain procedures to make sure that what you have in your possession is a reality. And I just want to throw that little part right there in. We're going to keep in mind now, if those of you who want to talk to the guest, now's the time. Go ahead and raise your hand so that he can answer you now and help you with whatever, provide some type of remedy for you now. So go ahead and raise your hand. We listen to our brother Commit to You Bay on Morris Talk Live 100. We're dealing with federal and civil procedures, and we're getting into the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of a lot of other different stuff. And we've moved into the second hour. Okay, brother, let us have a little bit more.
So, again, for those who are listening, I know that is a bit overwhelming, and some of us have to hear it again, but we must study that birth certificate. Again, I gave the website address, you know, which is investopedia.com, you know, INVESTOPEDIA, investopedia.com. And when you go into that site, you see the search engine and you can type in these financial terms, all right, because it's very important that you type in the word certificate, you type in the word bond, you type in the word issue, you type in warehouse receipt, you know, and there's a lot of other information that I can give you. But again, you know, it's a structure. The structure is very important because once you have structure and foundation, then you know which direction you have to go, all right, which is very important, all right. This information that I put out there tonight as far as this birth certificate, this is for those who are being troublesome with the child support issues, be it our brother or our sister. This is information is based upon the fact that, as Brother Tahaka earlier stated, that, you know, Rome run up in your house, which is the police force, and snatch your children out, you know. And, of course, the purpose of the Child Protective Services or BCW or ACS, I mean, they got these alphabet agencies when it comes to so-called child protection, they're getting funded for that. They're getting funded, all right? And it's just interesting that they're getting funded, right? And at the same time, who you think they get the funding from? They get the funding from the state, all right? So what are they telling you? They're telling you that there's a breach, all right? Now, here's the science. They would tell you you don't have custody of your children, all right? This is what they would say. Oh, he or she would have to go to court and get custody. If you don't have custody of your children, so the question is, well, how would you charge one who doesn't have custody of the children? Why would you come in the house and take the children if they don't have custody? That's the question. All right? And why would a mother or father have to go to family court to get a custody petition for the child? So now you find mother and father fighting over either joint custody, shared custody, you know what I'm saying, or physical custody. These are the terms that they use. All right? And again, you are a mom's or mother or father, and so therefore the word custody do not apply to you. We have to be careful with them Europeans out there that using fraudulent conveyance of language when it comes to jus sanguinis, because your jus sanguinis rights as a mother or a father supersede any statute that the state creates to say that you have custody or you don't have custody, all right? Those are words that is not to be in your vocabulary, all right? You have rights to your child, blood rights to your child, all right? You have parental rights to your child. And so we have to be careful with the words and the language. But in the meantime, the state is getting funded off your child, all right? Child Protective Agency and Child Support Collection, those are state agency. Matter of fact, let me share with you, for those who are out there listening, need to hear this. First of all, child support is getting funded not only do the state through the birth certificate, but it's also coming out of your paycheck. Every single last one of us who goes to a job and works at the 9 to 5 that receives a paycheck at the end of the week and they get taxes taken out of your check. One of the taxes that they take out of your check is called a Social Security tax, right? Child support falls under what you call is Title 4D of the Social Security Act. That's what child support falls up under, Title 4D of the Social Security Act. The Social Security tax that's being taken from your check is being paid into that fund. So it's your money that's funding the child support collection agency. So if your money is funding it, why would they come after you for child support when everybody who's working a 9 to 5 paying the Social Security tax is funding that? And not only that, Title 4D is the child support agency, all right, and where the child would get the funds from all those who are making their, what you call, its contribution, all right, contribution from your paycheck on the Social Security tax. That's one. And then the birth certificate, because the state is getting funding from the federal government. That's why I said that this Freedom of Information Act request from the Department of Commerce is very, very important to get that document, all right? That's to show that the state is receiving fundings from the federal government. Why? Because the 14th Amendment created that document that allowed the state, right, to join in with the federal funding. They're getting federal incentives from that birth certificate, all right, from the federal government. This is what what the states are receiving. This is what's being appropriated to each state, all right. This is how the state is being funded, all right, for each one of its quote unquote citizens, all right. And not only the state is getting the funded, but also the city is getting funded, because if you notice, at least up in New York City, all right, because I noticed other municipalities in other states have a different form of administration, but it all boils out to be the same. Up here in New York City, you would have to go to City Hall to get a copy of your birth certificate, all right, in New York City, all right. Outside of New York City, which is in, of course, Westchester County or Long Island, all right, out here, you would have to go to, again, City Hall to go get a copy of your birth certificate, all right. Why is that? Because the municipality that you're in is also getting funding, all right? So the state is accountable to you, and the municipality, which is the city, is accountable for you. So now you know that you're the creditor and that the state and the municipality is the debtor. Now you know that Child Support Collection Agency, they are the debtor and you're the creditor. This is the reason why I tell brothers and sisters, get what you call is the debtor-creditor law. You must know what your status is as far as creditor or debtor. Very important to know that. And I'm going to let you know that none of you are in here are debtors. You all are creditors, because this whole system was structured based upon a prepayment system. Everything is prepaid, all right? So what they did is to turn the tables and make it look like as though you're the debtor, all right? And the only reason why they're doing that is because this is how they make their money. Money is made on debt, all right? To be technical about credit, all right, is credit really means, it's a compound word, it means accrued debt. That's what the word credit from. When you take the syllables from the word accrue and the word from the word debit, and then you got the word credit, which is accrued debt. So what they're doing is how the debt is accruing is through lending, right, and the interest that's built upon what they allegedly had lent you, all right? So they can't lend you money, but what they lend you is credit. Who I'm referring to is the bank. They can't lend money, but they will lend you credit. And so they're saying that the credit that they lend you is accruing, all right? So, and that's why they're calling themselves the creditor. But no, we are lending them, all right, you know, And they are the ones who are indebted to us. But because the fact that as far as being a creditor, that's why we are in this condition that we are today. And the only way we're going to know these things is we have to study the Dictionary of Finance and Investment Term and the Dictionary of Banking Terms and, of course, the Bouvier Law Dictionary. We have to study structured finance, because once you begin to start studying structured finance, then you begin to know your position even better. And this is not only dealing with child support in a custody case with the state, but it's also an issue that's dealing in court, because the court system is the same thing. Because when you are arrested, all right, the warrants, all right, those are nothing but bill of latent and letters of credit and bonds that they want to collect on. These are nothing but warehouse receipts, all right? So when you begin to go to Bouvier's dictionary, look up the word bailor, bailee, and bailment. Those are the three words you need to look up, bailor, bailee, and bailment. All right, you're going to begin to start seeing the language. Then you're going to need to start looking at the word bonds. Look at the word securities. Look at the word certificate. All right, these words are very, very important. All right, very, very important. All right, Noble?
That's right. And, brother, I appreciate you delivering that bit of information. We still have new people coming in. We're listening to Brother Commit to You Bay as he described the inner workings of contract law, federal and civil procedures. The switchboard is lighting up. We got callers coming in. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line. Area code 773. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment. 773.
Islam, brother. How you feeling?
Hey, I'm fantastic, brother. Let us have it.
Peace, peace. Yeah, this is Brother Love Hill calling from Moorish Mecca, also known as Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
And I have a suit going against the city of Chicago. Ironically enough, they have utilized motion 12B6, which is an affirmative defense, and it's not an answer. But they're saying that they can they're ruling that the judge initially ruled in favor of the defendants, because we're the plaintiffs in the case, ruled in favor of their motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So what I was the question I'm asking, Brother Kimmett Tuve, is how would one go about overcoming a motion to dismiss?
Excellent. All right. All right. Listen to this, Noble. Very important. All right. And keep this in mind, family. Anytime you bring an action against the municipality, you must put in your notice of claim first, all right? You have to send it to the comptroller, all right, of that city, all right? You have to send your notice of claim to the comptroller of the city. You have to structure your notice of claim, and then you have to notarize it, right, and send it to the comptroller. You may have to go there in person if you can get there and let them stamp your copy so you can have one in your possession. All right, because every city or municipality has a comptroller, all right, and the comptroller is the one who would stamp your notice of claim, all right, or either you go to the corporation council. If you can't go to the comptroller, you go to the corporation council. Every municipality, I don't care where you at, Chicago, Texas, Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, I don't care where you at, either there's a comptroller or a corporation council within that municipality, you must have a notice of claim. The reason why they're saying that the plaintiff failed to state a claim where we need to be granted, because we didn't give them what you call is a provisional remedy. In the federal rules of civil procedure, they talk about a provisional remedy, and they're saying that you didn't seek a provisional remedy as an administrative procedure with that municipality, and because we didn't exhaust that, that's the reason why these attorneys are putting in that, because they know that that's one of our downfalls. So please, for those who are listening, if any one of y'all have what you call is a suit against a municipality, you must put in your notice of claim. All right? So, brother, put your notice of claim in. You can either send it to or take it in to either the comptroller or the corporation counsel for your notice of claim. You got to do that, all right? Even though you're in the midst of the litigation, you still should put your notice of claim in, one. Now, two, now what you have to do, Noble, is you have to put in what you call is an affidavit in opposition to the motion to dismiss. All right? You have to put in an affidavit in opposition. All right? Now, Rule 12A, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12A, says it shall be a complaint and an answer. And you're right, brother, because what these attorneys have a tendency to do, or the corporation counsel have a tendency to do, is that they don't put in an answer. And putting in a motion to dismiss is not an answer. So what happens is that the court is allowing the corporation counsel or its attorney to put in a motion to dismiss, which is not an answer. And how you know that's not an answer? Because go to Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 7A.
7A.
7A. When you see that there, brother, you're going to say, wow, I see what he's saying. Because the there has, shall be a complaint.
Shall be a complaint and an answer. It's law.
Yes, exactly. Now, then the next thing you got to put in is what you call is discovery. All right? You put the discovery in at the same time that you're putting in your motion in opposition. All right? And then you're going to have to use what you call is a memorandum of law. A memorandum of law. All right? Memorandum of law is cases that supports arguments for Rule 7A. All right? Now, what you could do is go into the law library, in the federal law library, up in federal court. They usually got their law libraries there. Look for either Moore's Federal Practice, M-O-O-R-E, apostrophe S, Moore's Federal Practice, or O'Connor Federal Practice. You can look into those books or whatever practices that you have in the federal litigation, and you can look in those books and look under the section where it talks about Rule 7A. And what happens then, Noble, what you will see, you can see that there's case laws there. All right? But what you need to do is look up the case laws that show that there shall be a complaint and an answer. So you're going to need case law, all right, to support your argument and your motion and your affidavit in opposition to the motion to dismiss. That's one. You're going to have to put in what you call is discovery. All right, discovery. All right, discovery is what you need.
Request for admit. Right. Brother, I let me explain something, because this case has been dismissed. I had already, when I put in, initially, I put in discovery in the door, request for admission. They were blocking discovery. So let me give you a brief narrative of what occurred, okay? Okay, we put in, we had three incidents where we had a violation of the right to travel. This is all dealing with the Chicago Police Department, okay? Two incidents involving myself, one involving my mother. Check this out. Last incident involving me is similar to what they did to my mother. They come to me, swarm the car, okay? Gun is drawn. Bust the window out, because I put my hands, and I have my fez on and everything, brother. Bust the windows out, drag me out the vehicle. Okay, they had no probable cause. They claimed, now this is a mobile strike force unit. Dig this. Eight of them came and rolled down on me. I'm by myself. They had no probable cause. They claimed that was failure to make a turning signal within 60 feet of a stop sign. That's why they claimed they could roll on me like that. Okay, so 2 weeks later, I filed a lawsuit because not only did they take me in, they raped me as far as my wallet. My cash was gone. Towed the vehicle. My wallet was, they put everything in my keys, my wallet, my phone in the car with the window broken out. I mean, they just did me bad, okay? So 2 weeks later, I filed a federal lawsuit involving all three incidents. Then we was granted an informal pauperis. So it was filed on the in February 16, 2010. It didn't get acknowledged until June of that year, 2010. Okay, so on 30th of June, 2010, the lawsuit is in. They come in automatically asking for to block discovery. Okay, now we're not understanding fully the implications of the rules. We just put the lawsuit in. We're just ready to go. We're just ready to get our justice. Okay, but these attorneys that are employed by the city, the municipality, they are full of tricks and games. Okay, and the courts are working with them. Okay, so what he does is he removes the discovery to the magistrate, okay, because there's a magistrate and a federal judge on each case, okay? So what they do is they pull the fast one. They put in a motion without noticing us up, come in, get an ex parte motion. The motion is granted. Magistrate never even seen us. He blocks discovery without us even coming into the courtroom, okay? This is after he was given supervisory power to oversee because we were pro se and because we were not attorneys and all of this, right? So, at any rate, they block discovery. They get granted the motion. Well, they put in the motion to dismiss. I mean, their whole thing was to string everything out and, you know, not to answer anything. They didn't have any. They never had any.
I want to interject something. What happens is this. Once they block discovery, I just want to interject it. I don't want to interfere with your flow. But once they block discovery, all right, or discovery didn't go through, then the next thing it was supposed to file is a motion to compel discovery.
Well, we did that. We did all that. But let me tell you something. We went so far into getting that discovery, they had got to the point where he summoned up extra marshals because I had filed, like, 10 motions in the – and if you look up the case, 10 CV 1047, just look it up. And that's in the Eastern Division. Man, I was hitting them with motions like a flurry, like Muhammad Ali, just hitting them with the motions. It was to the point where they started utilizing other tactics to intimidate us. Let me tell you what they did, the first thing they did. The city – attorney for the city said something out in open court. There's a marshal there, in the federal marshal in the courtroom. She said something to the nature of about one of the plaintiffs having a warrant for their arrest. So guess what they're doing? On our way of leaving out, they approach the sister like, we got to talk to you, okay? And we're the plaintiffs in the case. Make a long story short, they end up arresting the sister, okay, kidnapping her at the federal courthouse, okay? While this case is going on, this is what they're doing, okay? And so we filed another suit inside of that suit. We filed a suit because of that. And then they come, guess what they do after that? They come back. And this is what they use to try to get the informal paupers. They attack the informal paupers because they realize the inconsistency in the informal paupers that we had filed in the initial case. So anyway, at any rate, they get the court to agree to sanction us, so we had to pay the fees to continue the case, and then end up hitting us with a motion to dismiss, which the court granted. So what we did was we brought the case and resurrected it back in the state court because the trial court judge at the district court said something jazzy about, well, his verbiage was that he chose not to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the state claims, but that they could be resurrected in the state court if plaintiff chose to do so. So that's the route we took. Rather than go the route of appealing at the federal level, okay, we went and resurrected the claim in the state level and broke each incident up into three incidents, okay? So you don't know what they did? They take the cases from the state court and remove it back to the federal court, the same court that granted the original motion to dismiss.
Yeah, but see, brother, and that's what you have to file a motion to remand, because that's what they do, because they know that in the state court they're going to lose the case. They would do that. When they know that the venue that you because, see, what happened is the judge gave you the jewels where to put it at, all right? And so once you did that, they moved it back to federal court knowing that the judge is going to dismiss the case. That's one of the tactics that they use. That's what we have right now.
And that's what we have right now. And then we just filed a new case for an incident that they did just last month. on top of that. And now they removed
right.
that to the federal court. Huh?
Did you file a motion to? Did you file a motion to remand it back? You had 30 days when they put the
No, I haven't filed it for that one. I guess I could do that for the case that's already pending because they just got that in on Friday. But for the other
all
ones,
right.
it's already going. The other two, the other three cases are already in motion. So we duped it out.
Right, brother, let me hit you with another jewel. Let me hit you with another trump card. This is something that you need to be aware for all those who are listening. All right, because I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to have to bring this in too. Look up what you call is pro hac vici. Pro, which is P-R-O.
Pro hac vice?
Pro hac vici, or vice. Some say vici, some say vice.
That's P-R-O-H-A-C-V-I-C-E?
P-R-O, which is pro, hoc, which is H-O-C, V-C, which is V-I-C-E.
Okay, I got you.
Right. Now, in the Chicago, in the state of Illinois jurisdiction, look that up and see what the application is for that. I'm going to tell you why I'm dropping that on everybody, because you have to look that up within in the state of where you domicile in federal court. Why I'm saying this, brother, because I did this against three top law firms and scared the hell out of them. You got to go get a copy of the civil docket sheet, brother. All right? Now, this is for the case while it's pending now. If the case is pending, you can use it. If the case is thrown out, you can't use this method. It got to be pending in order to use this method. When you go get a copy of the civil docket sheet, get it. Make sure you get a certified copy. The reason why you get a certified copy, because a certified copy means that anything that's been on this docket that you certified, anything that comes after that cannot be on that same docket that's certified. So you must get a certified docket copy of the docket sheet, right? And then what you have to do is file a motion to sanction those attorneys and that law firm, because when you look up the motion for pro hac vici, you will come to find out that an attorney must file an application to enter into that jurisdiction of that court. And they have to, what you call, is in order.
Take care, brother.
You have to get an order from the court to be allowed to practice law in that jurisdiction. So go to Black's Law Dictionary, look up the word pro hac vici, and look at the definition. And then go online and look up for the application within the nation state that you're in, all right, in reference to that federal court. And you will find out that the attorney did not file a motion for pro hac vici. They have to file that. Why? Because involved with that is a certificate of good standing that the attorney has to file with that motion, and he also have to pay what you call is a fee. Have to pay an application fee to file that application to practice in that jurisdiction, and it takes 30 days for the court to approve that law firm. If the law firm stop filing pleadings against you in the court and have not filed for a motion for probation, then you can file what you call is sanctions. You can file sanctions against that law firm in that court to keep them from further litigating, and that will make them forfeit the case to cause you to win the case.
Okay, motion to sanction what now?
What happens is this, so you know what I'm saying. There's an application. You will see the language in the application for motion for pro hac vici. Once you see it, you will see that there's a procedure for a motion for pro hac vici. The procedure is that the attorney would have to get a certificate of good standing, plus they have to pay a fee to the clerk, all right, for that application. And then they have to wait for an order from the judge, all right, to allow that law firm to come in to the federal court to practice, because they're not federal attorneys, they state attorneys. So they have to get permission from the federal judge as an order allowed to practice. So what I'm saying is that
Once you find, once you get a certified copy of the civil docket sheet, you come to find out that the law firm did not file an application to practice in the jurisdiction of the court, and it doesn't go by notice of appearance. You can't, if they put down notice of appearance, that's not how the application goes. The application, they have to actually file an application, and they have to wait for an order for the judge to allow them to practice in that jurisdiction. All right, and if the judge is allowing them to practice without that order, then that's when you can come after the judge, because the judge is not following the rules of the court, and you can file a judicial complaint, misconduct complaint against the judge, because he allowed the law firm to come into his court and practice without giving, without an proper application. That's a procedure, family. That's a trump card.
And what you're saying is, brother, typically even the municipal attorneys for the municipalities don't do this.
That's correct, brother. That's correct. But remember now, this is only done in the federal court, so this is not on the state level. What I'm saying is, if you file a federal lawsuit in federal court, what I'm saying to those out there who are listening, once that lawyer or that law firm starts to file their motion pleadings, like a motion to dismiss because of the 12B6 that they're using against you, what you use against them for your defense is the fact that he didn't file a motion for prohibition to come into the federal venue to practice, and he didn't get an order from the court to allow him to practice, and he didn't put an application, and he didn't pay the fee, right? And that's what would automatically would sanction, that would be a sanction from him to come to practice. So all the pleadings and stuff have to be stricken from the record, which means that it will be an automatic win for you.
Oh, question, brother. We only have a few more minutes left, and I'm gonna have to go on to the next caller, brother. I hope he's shedding enough light for you.
Yes, sir. I understand. This is. I just wanted to put out there that we, the reason why we're demonstrating like this is because we represent the Moorish Law Services. So we are a Moorish law firm, and what we're doing is we're out here demonstrating on behalf of the people. We understand that we don't have to do this. We do this by the will of Allah. This is Brother Loveville in Moorish Mecca. Anybody have any questions or anything like that, we demonstrate at area code 773-699-5905. Brother, it's been a pleasure. But there was one other thing I wanted to hear from you. That's a motion. You know, you said that's a motion to sanction the courts, to sanction the attorneys, right?
We're going to talk about motion to sanction the attorney from the court. But listen, you said 773, because I'm going to call you. 773 what?
699-5905.
And you said Loveville?
Yeah, Loveville. Brother Loveville.
I got you. No, well, I will give you a call, family.
Yes, sir, brother. Appreciate that.
Yes. All right. Yes, sir, brother. Doc, you are.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and open up the line to area code 571. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to call in, go ahead and call in now. We only have 26 minutes left, so you all be brief and state your question right quick, and let the brother go ahead and help you out right quick so we can go on to the next caller.
All right, peace, family. Can you hear me?
Peace, Noah.
571, are you there?
571, I'm here.
Oh, okay, hold on, let me open it back up. Okay, come on in, 571.
All right, peace, family. This is Brother Weeks Bay out of Virginia. And I had a question relative to, I guess, the earlier discussion before the last brother's questions. Listening to the discussion around different topics, the just sanguinous and right and these different issues. I was hoping Brother Kometa, you could speak how some of these same things he was talking about applies to mortgage situations.
All right. It's interesting that Brother Weeks is bringing this up because he knows that I'm very well learned in that area in reference to mortgages. I know the brother personally, and I thank you for calling in, and thank you for the support. When it comes to the mortgage, family, and this is something that may shock all of you out there, then please listen to me carefully, because this brother didn't bring this topic up for no reason. All right. All those who got mortgages, listen to me very carefully. Get your mortgage contract agreement, and there's something in your mortgage that you need to be aware of. All right? And we can move on those banks, and we can get our money, family, because none of us out there is supposed to pay a mortgage. Your mortgage is technically paying off itself. Listen to me carefully. In your mortgage contract agreement, there's what you call is mortgage insurance. All mortgages are insured. The banks kick out at least somewhere near 20 mortgage insurance policies. If you go and look at your mortgage document, it's possibly on either the first page, the second page, or the third page. Look up where it says mortgage insurance, and it gives you the definition of mortgage insurance. And 19 of the 10, what you're going to see, where it's going to say that its lender, right, is protected on loan if there's what you call a non-payment or a default. All right? So who's protected? The lender, because there's insurance on the loan. And so what I'm saying is that the bank, which is the lender, is not letting people know that when there is a non-payment or a default on loan, as specifically being described in that section that could be on page 1, 2, or 3. You got to critically look at it. Look at the section where it says mortgage insurance. All right? You will see where that insurance is indemnifying your mortgage if there's what? A non-payment or a default on loan. Now, what did that mean? That means that there shouldn't be now no foreclosure. That's why I said that foreclosure are really fraud closure, because how could you indemnify a mortgage, right, and then turn around and foreclose on the same mortgage where the lender is protected, all right? Is there provisional remedy? All right, that's what you have to say in court, family, for those who got a mortgage under foreclosure. You have to let the court know, or the clerk or the referee or whoever you're sitting in with this loan modification crap, and let them know, listen, there's a provisional remedy in my mortgage contract agreement that says that the lender is protected if there's a default or non-payment, all right? You have to have a subpoena. Subpoena that mortgage insurance from that lender, and you will see how many different mortgage policies on that loan. So you'll be surprised that loan could either be two-thirds paid off, it is a balance, or the whole mortgage could be paid off. So you'd be surprised that information is there, and we are unaware of it because we're not reading the mortgage contract, all right? And so, therefore, there's no reason for you to be in court. Anytime a lender brings any one of our brothers and sisters in court for their mortgage, you're being brought there under misrepresentation and fraud, all right, and malfeasance of office for that particular lender to bring you into court and want to take your property away from you because they're claiming that you defaulted. No, no. There is indemnification insurance, all right? That's no different than if you was driving your car down the street and you had an accident, there's insurance. The same thing with your mortgage. If there was a loss of the note, which means that you didn't make a payment, that's what that means. Look up the word loss. That's the financial statement. You can redeem that mortgage based upon whatever insurance that's there. But you have to find out how many insurance policies that the bank took out. 9 to the 10, it normally be about 20 policies, all right? The bank might have cashed in about 15 or 16 of those policies and have maybe a remaining 4 or 5 of those policies still left lingering. So your mortgage note, say, for instance, if your mortgage is $400,000 and you got these insurance policies, who knows, your mortgage may be left maybe like one-third or maybe left a little less than one-third of your mortgage. So this is something that you need to really check into, all right? That's one aspect. The second aspect of it, so you know what time it is Q-SIP number. If you get the Q-SIP number, because two people that I know right now in my class have got their Q-SIP number on the mortgage, and the mortgage is in the billions of dollars. So now we're talking about going after the money that belongs to you from that escrow account that the money should have been going into to pay off your mortgage and also put into your own account for you to have access to. So that's another issue that I'm not going to take up too much time because I know the time is short.
Okay. I hope you, brother, I hope you've he's answered your question. I'm going to have to go on to the next caller. I'm opening up line 954. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what your question is coming?
This Janet again. Okay, now the subject you're talking about right now is mortgage, and I have an auction date for my house to be sold on the 27th of this month. What should I do?
Sis, listen, take my number down.
Okay, I got your number.
All right, well, give me a call, Janet, all right?
Okay, I'll call you.
Because what happens is that, like Brother Tahaka said, we got a little bit of time, and
right.
I can express myself freely like I want to. So, Janet, please give me a call, and we will talk.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, sister. All right, I'm going up here to area code 256. Area code 256. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment? Area code 256. Come on in. Islamo? Okay. All right, brother. We only have what we got left. We got 18 minutes left. Now, could you give us some more things on this mortgage situation to look out for so we can cover that base? And you told us about the insurance. And so is there anything else that we might need to be aware of in regards to mortgage?
Well, brother, the most basic thing we would need to be aware of in the mortgage, I mean, brother, I can give a lecture on that alone, but again, like you stated, I can spend hours and hours on that. But to make it brief and short to the point, because with respect to time, is that, as I elaborated before, if you get your mortgage agreement, it's either on page 1, 2, or 3. You got to look in those pages. And look up the definitions. That's what the section that you need to go in, because some states may have their definitions in a different location. Because what they're doing is they're saying, like, lender. Then they define the position of the lender. Then they would say mortgage insurance. Then they define mortgage insurance. Then they would say maintenance. Then they define maintenance. You get me? So look in the section that's dealing with the definitions of the terms that's being used in your mortgage agreement. But look up the term mortgage insurance. Again, go to Investopedia. Let's open up our thoughts. Go to Investopedia and type in mortgage insurance. All right? Because if your mortgage agreement is not saying it in there and you can't find it, just go to Investopedia, make it easy, open up your mind, and type in mortgage insurance. And then you're going to see. But one thing I like about Investopedia that you're going to see for yourself, they're going to give you the definition of the term, and then they're going to give you an example so you can comprehend the definition. It's sort of like almost like a thesaurus. All right, this is what Investopedia does, and I like that site because it gives you some good insight on how to see that term that you're looking up in finance. All right, so that's something that we need to look at. What we need to do, too, all right, is if you got a mortgage issue and it's in court, all right, or it all depends now because there's what you call non-judicial foreclosing states and judicial foreclosing states. Non-judicial foreclosing states, you're going to have to bring that in to court, all right, in order to stop that action. I have done that for somebody up in Rhode Island about a year ago because Rhode Island is a non-judicial foreclosure state. All right, which means the bank will send you their notice in the mail, all right, and then they want you to respond to that. And then what happens is that within a certain amount of days, they would send you another notice saying the date of the sale of your property, all right? So for the non-judicial foreclosure states, I have to address that, all right? What you have to do is put in what you call is a RESPA request
letter, a RESPA request letter, all right? I would have to go into details with those who may want to call me on the phone, because that RESPA request letter is a federal statute law under banking, under 12 USC. That's the banking statute under the United States Code. And all banks is subject to respond to a RESPA request letter, all right? But the way I structure my RESPA request letter, there's certain information in there that you need, all right? And one of that is the mortgage insurance policies, all right, that you want that to be disclosed to you as a part of the RESPA request disclosure statement from the bank in reference to your mortgage, all right? So you need that, all right? The best way to stop the bank from foreclosing on your property in a non-judicial foreclosure state is to bring it to federal court, and that's what I do. All right, I did it for a woman up in, like I said, Rhode Island, and she got excellent results. As a matter of fact, I put her in a position where she bought another house, and the other house she bought is the house next to the house that she was in that was going to be foreclosed on, so she was in a position to buy another house, all right, because they cut her mortgage actually in half with the information that I shared with her and actually helped her litigate in federal court up in Rhode Island, all right. That's for a non-judicial foreclosing state, because you got states where they don't take you to court to foreclose on you because the foreclosure agreement was already incorporated into the mortgage agreement, all right, in those states that they don't take you to court to foreclose on. So, but the RESPA request letter is a very important letter to send back to the bank. You send it to them, certified term receipt. Send it to the same address that they send you the notice in reference to your mortgage that's going to be accelerated or foreclosed on. You send a RESPA request letter. My number, again, is 347-626-1357. That's 347-626-1357. My email is F like in Fred, U like in Umbrella, R like in Red, D like in David, E like in Eric, M like in Mary, UIR like in Red at yahoo.com. You can reach me there, or you can text me at my telephone number so we can get further into details, and I know that our time is short. All right, there's other remedies that can be used also with the mortgage. One is the QSUP number, so you can see what the fund that the mortgage is making, because those monies belong to your escrow account, and those monies need to be liquidated in your escrow account that you would have to have access to. All right, so again, Brother Tahaka, I have to hand it back over to you because I know our time is short.
Okay, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, after this broadcast is over, anytime I do a broadcast, it'll take between 10 to 15 minutes for the studio to edit the broadcast. So I have taken the liberty of posting this broadcast as we're doing it live. So if you have, once we get off the air and you go and you click on the link and it takes you back to the page to hear the broadcast and you don't hear anything, just remember to come back later on, because it takes a certain amount of time for them to edit this broadcast, in about 10 or 15 minutes. You come back and then you can re-listen to the broadcast. You can download the broadcast and have access to the information. And you do need to listen to this over and over and over until you are able to take all the notes that you need to take and remember and write down all the numbers and contact information that you need to write down so that you can accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. Also, and moving toward the end of the show, I want to add one more time that on the November the 18th, we have Dr. Whitaker here right here in Jacksonville at Matthew Dale Salam's bookstore. And for information in regard to that and ticket sales, you can contact me, Tahaka, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can handle that for you. Also, January the 11th through the 13th, we're having our workshops down here, right here at the Best Western down in Jacksonville, Florida. And I will be there personally teaching contract law and how to do administrative procedures and show you how to do some things. And so we look forward to seeing you there. Also, brother, I would like to ask if you will be available to come back next weekend and we can start dealing with how to get the loved ones out of prison, some more information on mortgages, and some other things involving the certain procedures. Is that possible?
Yes, brother. Yes, I'll definitely be back next Sunday, brother. And it is a pleasure to be on the air to talk to you, Brother Tahaka, and our brothers and sisters who are listening. Thank you for your support.
Okay. All right. Now, we got 10 minutes left, and I think that's enough time for us to get some more information in. And for those of you who tuned in at the last minute, we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the United States, and the actual templates for doing and filing what documents you need to file and following what procedure you need to file is right there at the Tahaka's Library, and you access that by contacting me. Now, we post a lot of information for your education right there on Facebook, so if you just type my name into Facebook, send your friend request to keep me banned because I keep have a bad habit of telling the truth. So y'all go ahead and type in Tahaka Amana L. Bay right there on Facebook. I'll grant your friend request, give you access to my wall and all the previous broadcasts and articles that we'll post. You have access right there to it. You can take your time and get this information down, okay? Now, brother, I want to ask you, in regards to the mortgage company and the banks and dealing with the sheriffs, let's, if you could briefly describe the administrative procedure before we get into the civil procedure. Could you give us some administrative procedure tips?
All right. Well, technically, well, the civil procedure is an administrative procedure because all the governments under the federal, all the way down to the local municipality, are all operating on an administrative procedure, all right? And this administrative procedure was enacted, all right, under the new Reconstruction, which is going back to 1871. It's called the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871. That's when the United States went corporate. All right, which you will find in Title 28 of the United States Code, 3002.15a, where it says United States is a federal corporation. All right, so because of the federal status of the United States, which is no longer government because it's been said that a government that goes bankrupt is no longer the government, is a corporation. So we still thinking in our thought pattern that the United States is a government, all right? And so it's not a government no longer. It's a corporation, all right? And in the corporation, they have what you call is the administration. They have what you call is the Administrative Act, of the Federal Administration Act, all right, which falls upon the Title V of the United States Code. Very important to know that. And then the states have administrative procedure, all right? And how you know this is true, family, for all those who are listening out there, remember this. Every court, I don't care what court you in, what municipality you in, what state you in, it all falls up under the same uniform system. And listen to me carefully. You have what you call is the administrative court, or what they say, court of administration, all right? The reason why I'm saying this is because those who are dealing with estate letters or office of the executor, they would recognize that they would have to send a document to the administrative court. The administrative court is the court that actually is the court that deals with the different courts within that venue or jurisdiction. All right? So you have the supervisor, the head supervisor in that administrative court system who you should be addressing your documents to, all right, especially when it comes to your apostille, because your apostille is really referring to your status, all right, which we all should know. It goes back to the Hague of 1961, and it deals with your status, all right? So what I tell people, and which is what I've heard from you, Brother Tahaka, is that if you were to go to court, all right, first establish your status first before you enter into that courtroom arena, because then more than half the battle will be won when you establish your status in the court. But where do you establish your status in the court? You got to go to the administrative court, all right, that deals with all the different courts within that venue and jurisdiction, all right, so you have them covered. So once your documents is there in that administrative court, the judge would already know what your status is, all right, and so whatever municipal officer was claiming that you were having a traffic issue or a statute change for custody or a child support issue or even if a mortgage issue, your status would already be on record, and then they would have to deal with you according to your status, Noble.
Okay, fantastic delivery, my brother. That is the administrative procedure process. Ladies and gentlemen, the time is fleeting, and we're going to have to close down the broadcast, and I appreciate you, Brother Commit to You, Bay. And keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, the brother's already agreed to be back with us Sunday evening, so we'll be back the same time at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll go ahead and start posting this coming ahead of time so that we can get everybody here. And make sure that if you got a court case, make sure if your loved ones have a court case or what have you, bring that to the broadcast so that you can address it, give it to the brother so that he can address the issue, and we can make every attempt possible to answer your questions and give you some type of remedy to get your situation solved. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and ladies and gentlemen, until next time.
Check his number.
Wait a minute.